Welcome to a conference championship version of the Fear the Wave cast. This is Kelly Camarda with Jimmy Ordineau and Jake Weinstock. Jimmy, you know, it wasn't always pretty, but that was one of the gutsiest and biggest wins in Wave history.
You wouldn't want it any other way, really. I mean, looking back on it, that there was a point in the game where, you know, you're up 10 and they're 2 inches. They get a first down by 2 inches on a questionable spot. If you get the ball right there, you got a chance to kind of put the game away, or at least put them in a position where they had to do what they had to do in that last drive, which was try to beat you by dropping back and throwing with Prater, which wasn't going to happen, as we saw in that last drive. But, you know, that's not the way it broke out. And the way it broke out was that we had to be gutty and we had to be gritty and we had to fight for every inch of our lives and just be the tougher team. And that's what we've done all year. And so it was more fitting that the game went the way that it did. You know, I don't know where you start with the accolades. You know, there were some down things too, obviously, why the game was probably as close as it was, but I mean, just incredible, man. Just incredible. And I couldn't be prouder to see what we saw out of those guys today.
Absolutely. And Jake, as you mentioned in the preview, we rode Tyjae hard today. I mean, he didn't come off the field, I don't think, for a single play. And if he did, I must have missed it. But, you know, 35-plus carries, you know, a buck 70 rushing, just he was the man. And he dictated the game. And without Tyjae, I mean – you know, where would we be?
We'd be looking at figuring out how to spend our time next Saturday afternoon, because I don't think we'd be making the tailgating plans the three of us are making right now without him. No, but I mean, you know, Jimmy was ragging me before the show. Obviously, all season, I've wanted to see this team lean into the passing attack. But against this opponent, this really was the best way to play. And I think the game plan was absolutely on point. You had to commit to running the football against this team. Even if you could have only gotten 15 or 20 of those carries out of Tyjae, you had to do it this way. And credit to the offensive staff. I really loved how creative it was, right? Because the Cincinnati front is so tough and it's so hard to just line up and say, all right, we're going to run right at you. We used so much motion today. We ran off of that. Couple of successful pop passes off of that, use it as misdirection to get Tyjae going off tackle. That third drive of first half, we went down and got down, like 15, 16 play drive was really where it all came together. And the running game really was the focal point. And the driver of success, right? I mean, that's how I've worded it all season. I want to see the passing game drive success. But when you have such a level of confidence in a back that you have, number one, number two, that you can get him for 35 touches. And then number three, that you're not going to need 11 or 12 possessions and 45 points to win the game because of the level of confidence you have in your defense, as Coach Fritz did today. You can win gritty close games like this. That is exactly the correct blueprint, and it all came together. And here we are, first conference championship game in 24 years.
Absolutely. And Jimmy, you see that we play almost a perfect game across the board as far as, you know, very few penalties, no turnovers. You know, special teams is a big factor. Ambrosio hitting a 47-yard field goal was clutch and ended up being the deciding points. But you know, you look at this team, and when we needed Michael Pratt the most, he came through huge.
Yep, yep. And look, I mean, you know, the plan appeared to be, and I think we felt really good about it, much to Jake's point, is that we're going to ride Spears. And I was a little surprised by the fact that he didn't come off the field. But, and you know, he did look a little tired towards the end, but had the biggest run of the game probably was his first down he got on that drive, despite the fatigue. But you ride Spears and then you look to beat them vertically in a pass game in play action, because that's a man team. They're man cover one. They want to come after you. They want to force you out of the run game and try to beat them through the air and trust that their athletes in the secondary can stop your receivers. And, you know, there was a lot of tight coverage. There's no doubt about it. But at the same time, the drops really in the game. I mean, you know, when you talk about penalty free, I totally agree. You know, no turnovers, huge. But really the drops were what probably kept this game close, because I think the plan was, you know, to stretch the field vertically off of play action. And there were some looks that I thought we could have had, and then, you know, didn't get them all game long, really. And then on that last drive, boom, boom, you know, big chunk plays in the air and got the touchdown. I mean, it was sort of like, part of me was like, where you been all day, you know, but at the same time, I mean, you knew we had the ability in it. And Mike, the two balls he threw for the pass to Shea for the long gainer, and then the touchdown to Deuce were, I mean, on the money strikes, you know, and he was upright for those throws. And that was part of it. You know, there's no doubt about it that they were getting a man loose and pressuring him in his face some. But on that drive, when you needed them the most, when you sort of have this, as a fan, have this weight of Tulane history bearing down on you after Cincinnati takes the lead, to have that sort of response was breathtaking. And, you know, credit to all those guys. I mean, they haven't worn that weight of history all year long. You know, that's been sort of me and us as fans, thinking about all the times that we've come up short. They haven't. They've kept their eye on the prize. They've kept the 1-0 goal all season long, and they've accomplished it up to this point. Now they've set it up to play at home to win the biggest, you know, to win the first conference championship game ever. And so all the credit to them on that.
Absolutely. And you see that, you know, the first couple of times we had a chance to hit him with some big pass plays, as you mentioned, Pratt got hit both of those times. Later in the game, when Tajay had worn them down a little bit, you know, that pass rush wasn't really there anymore. And that allowed Michael to, you know, to stay upright and to find those guys. But I think you mentioned something that I've never really thought about until this point in time. But we've got fifth-year seniors on this team that don't really, you know, not only do they not carry the weight of Tulane's past, but they're four bowl games in 5 years. You know, if you're a fifth-year senior, you've been to four bowl games in 5 years, and you look at that fifth year as an anomaly because of the hurricane and all the other things that happened. You know, this is a program of guys that know how to win now, guys that expect to win, and they were calm, cool, collected this whole game. You know, I was feeling the heat from a lot of Tulane fans. I'm in a lot of group chats, and people are texting me left and right, you know, that in the middle of the fourth quarter that we're going to lose. I mean, you know, I just kept telling them, like, just relax. This team, for whatever reason, they don't panic. And we came up with the plays when we needed to. I mean, kudos to a lot of guys who came in and made a big play when they needed to. Jake, I know on defense, Keith Cooper, DJ Douglas, two guys that made big plays down the stretch. What did you like from Tulane's defense today?
Well, Cooper and Hodges, it's impossible not to like. You know, it felt like, for the most part, especially when we're in the game, the focus for Tulane's front four was simply to contain Prater and not really be aggressive in getting after the passer. But credit to those guys, because at the very end of the game, on Cincinnati's last two possessions, after you've retaken the lead and now, you know, they need to throw the ball to beat you, they got after him. And the last series of the game, four and out, right prior to the kneel down, Prater did not have a chance on any of the first three snaps. And that's how you wind up with a 4th and 16, you know, on your own goal line. But the DJ Douglas play was tremendous. I mean, there was one view on the broadcast where Prater actually made a really, really nice ball or throw on that play. Might have been his best of the day. And DJ just got just enough of it, because that was going for 20 plus. And that could have, that absolutely could have been the start of a different outcome if he doesn't make that play and he's not perfectly in position to do so. Really tough to tell schematically what we did on TV. You guys know that's why I hate watching games on television. I'd rather go. But, you know, it felt like if we could just, as Jimmy said, force Prater to make plays through the passing game, he wasn't going to be able to do it consistently enough. You know, when you can stay in a too high shell, force everything underneath, make an inaccurate quarterback go the length of the field, make them, you know, have 10, 11, 12, 13 play drives to try to get a touchdown. That's something that most inaccurate passers can do with enough success. You saw it today. They were just one drive short. You know, when they were able to rely on their running game, and when Tulane had some spotty issues in tackling, some guys would like to have back, they had big success. But really, both touchdown drives for Cincinnati were primarily the byproduct of a big play. Again, great game plan on that side of the ball. And I do want to say one other thing about how we came out. I have been critical at times when we have made conservative decisions on fourth and short. That being said, on the second Tulane offensive possession, we had punted on the first one. We had gotten down into field goal range and faced a fourth and two, but I think it was pretty apparent to everyone that maybe the offense was playing a little bit tight. Certainly number seven seemed a little bit tight to open the game. And so really good call, I think, by Willie to take the points, let the kids get a breather, let them get further acclimated to 40,000 fans, a national TV game on the road, and you know, come back shortly thereafter with the touchdown, I think, on the very next drive. Again, who knows what the outcome would have been if he had been aggressive there, which, again, I normally would advocate for. You don't get it against a tough Cincinnati front. What does that do to the mentality of the offensive side of the ball? Whereas it really seemed to light a fire under them, but they got something going. They had some level of confidence thereafter. They got points, and obviously the offense came through in the end to get it done.
Yeah, those points, you know, proved to be critical. You know, we never know. Hindsight's 20/20. You never know if you're going to get a touchdown there, or, you know, what's going to happen. But you know, fourth down didn't go our way today, Jimmy, and our guys didn't seem fazed by that. I mean, we gave up first downs by inches. We, you know, missed first downs by inches. And, you know, all season we've had pretty good success on those downs, and today it just didn't happen, but we didn't let that stop us.
Yep. No, you know, and look, I mean, I mentioned one earlier, I think, but the fourth down run where you get the hit in the backfield, and if they don't get it there, you can potentially put the game away. You think about it, both of their touchdown drives in the second half, both came where you literally 2 inches the other way, and they get no points, right? That play with the measurement, and then the toe tap reception that was overturned. Good job by Fickell to make him watch that. Gambled a timeout, but he got what he wanted. But I mean, you know, 2 inches either way, and those drives don't even happen. And so you can get down on yourselves when you're so close, and yet, you know, they get it. But to our guys' credit, man, they just never did. It goes back to just what they're made of, and their collective grit as a team. It's remarkable. And I mean, and you're doing it against a team that has that, right? I mean, that Cincinnati kept this game close in part because Cincinnati profoundly believes that they're the class of the league, and that you're not going to take a win from them on their home turf. I don't think that team was particularly special. With Prater quarterback, the kid didn't make a single throw that I can think of on time, in rhythm, all game long, right? Except like the passing. Yeah, except the last one I was trying. He was waiting. He had to see it open up. He was confused by the looks he was getting. So he was late. And his passing plays he did make were all on sort of extended play scenarios, receivers breaking off routes and then getting open. I mean, you know, and you know, most teams, that SMU team we played last week, if they had that sort of success in a passing game, we'd have won 70-3. You know, I mean, but that team is who they are, and they're tough, and they're the big boys on a block, and they challenge your manhood. And the fact that Tulane was able to go in there and stand to that challenge and win, it's sort of like, you know, Balboa knocking out Drago or whatever. You know, I mean, it's just like stuff Hollywood stuff's made of, but just incredible. I mean, that really is what it comes down to. We can talk about schemes, we can talk about personnel and all that is important, and it's all good. But at the end of the day, it came down to Tulane having just a little bit more intestinal fortitude than they did. And that's saying something, because Cincinnati plays like champions.
Absolutely. And we're going to have to face most likely UCF next week at home. I mean, obviously it's still possible that Cincinnati could be coming to New Orleans if South Florida pulls up the upset of the season. But Jimmy, let's talk about UCF a little bit. You know, we owe them one, number one, and we get a chance to potentially, you know, get our third win against the guys leaving for the Big 12 next year. You know, what do you expect to see from UCF, and what do you think we learned about them during that first game?
Yeah, well, you know, we knew it. Now, first game, you know, I think we had some question whether we would get Plumlee or Keene, and that probably influenced our preparation a little bit. We know we're going to see Plumlee here, and we know what he brings to the table. He's really dynamic, as good as the kid Prater was today with his feet. Plumlee is even better. Now, like Prater, I don't know that Plumlee brings a tremendous amount in the passing game. I don't know that we can count on, I think it was 4.4, Jake, yards per completion like we saw last time around. Yeah, we got to expect that he'll be a little better in the passing game. But ultimately, like that game plan today, and Jake talked about it earlier, but on that last drive where you collapse the pocket, where your lane integrity is so good and you collapse the pocket in a way that there's no escape routes for the quarterback, and the sack happens basically because you put their tackles into the quarterback's lap, you know, that's the pass rush. I mean, that's what you got to see. And you know, I do think it is a tall order, and I would hate it to be in their shoes to have to beat a team that I'm pretty evenly matched with for a second time on their home turf. I know that they have some confidence that they can do it, but you know, I just feel like that's a tall task. Number one. Number two is that I think what we saw with Cincinnati, we know what we're going to get with Cincinnati. UCF. I don't know that there's a lot of wrinkles left in that Malzahn offense. It is what it is with their guy, and can you stop it? Number one. Number two, you know, can you make plays against their defense? Now, I think we may have had some big game jitter stuff that first time around that won't be there, that was not there today. You know, I think for the first time with all eyes on you, I think we were a little too excited to play last time around. And it took us a little while to get into the ballgame. I don't think UCF is going to get the benefit of that this time around. If they beat us, it's going to be because they beat us straight up once again. And, you know, I just don't think we're going to see that out of them. I think these guys have what it takes. My one concern is, you know, I don't know if there's a hyperbaric chamber somewhere around New Orleans we can put spears in or whatever, but the man needs to get his legs back under him. We're going to need another big performance from him next week.
There is one. Folks, go to Fear the Wave, donate to help get him into one, but I can tell you there is one. So donations appreciated. We'll put it to good use.
Okay, Jake is in charge for his extracurricular healing process. But we got to take care of that man, get him ready to go. But otherwise, I think we came through pretty injury-free. We've got to check on Larry Brooks. But, you know, I think we'll have pretty much our horses ready to go next week.
And it looked like Larry came back in the game on that last drive. So I think he it was at least well enough to come back in and finish the game off. But, you know, Jake, tell me a little bit about, you know, if you're Chris Hampton and you're facing Central Florida again, how would you defend? And knowing that Plumlee ran for, I believe, like 118 yards in the first quarter against us. And then the rest of the game, it was like, you know, 3 or 4 yards a carry. What do you remember about that game, about the adjustments that we made, and what would you do if you were in Coach Hamp's position?
Well, I think during the first game, and I think it was Jimmy who pointed this out, I didn't go back and track this, but it surely felt like we played UCF in man about 80% of the time, which is really not our game, is not our style. And the problem with, as you guys know, the problem with playing an opponent in man coverage, even if you do keep both safeties back, is that it opens up a lot of lanes for the quarterback to run. And there's no one in that middle of the field in the intermediate area to defend him if he does. You have a lot of guys with their backs turned. And on a lot of the highlight plays he made in that game, that's what you saw. You had backs turned, man coverage. Results. At the end of the drives. So I think maybe we go with a spy. Maybe we do a little bit of what we did today, which seemed to be, seemed to be not a true spy. But again, the priority for the front four is to contain as much as it is get the quarterback on the ground, and not let those running lanes develop and open up. And then, you know, the AAC's Josh Allen is running around a little bit, making big plays on third down. We all said it on the podcast after that game. Gosh, we'd love to have another shot at this team. You know, certainly one thing that I hope will change is that in that first meeting, our front seven, really our front six, got pushed around and got bullied at times by that UCF offensive line in a way that we had not seen this season, not even against Kansas State. You know, on the other side of the ball, I think our offensive line got beat in the trenches a little bit in that game as well. So you would hope now, having seen these guys twice in a month, being able to review not only film of the guy across from you, but film of yourself going against the guy across from you, we'll put up a better effort in the trenches there. And that, you know, I can talk all day long about cornerbacks and receivers and pass coverages, but Jimmy will be the first one to tell you guys that it starts at the line of scrimmage. And if the defensive line is getting penetration on every single play, they're going to be okay. And if an offensive line is pushing linemen 3-4 yards down the field, they're going to be okay. So that's where it starts. But schematically, that is the thing that I would focus on with today. One other thing I want to congratulate one of our players. I think this is correct. I believe today was Michael Pratt's first career comeback victory in the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken. He's into the fourth quarter tied a couple of times. Kelly, I laid the bait for Jimmy, and he took it. The passing game at the end of the day was what came through for us on those two big throws. Both were tremendous. Congratulations to him, because that's a big spot to get a come from behind victory in the fourth quarter.
Well, Jake claims victory, Jimmy. Do you have anything to say about that?
No, man. I'm an old man now. I learned the way wins, we all win. I let Jake have that little win, but no, it was huge. I mean, and like I told Jake at the time, you know, I think the plan was really to do that all day, and it took a little while to kind of get on the same page with the receivers, but they came through when it counted most. Yeah. No, one quick thing to add, Jake. You know, I never went back and watched the UCF game, but I saw Bill Connolly had us in his breakdown of the game. Actually, had us like 60-70% of the time was in other, which is in terms of man zone or other. And so I really think watching the tape, what he saw was probably a lot of zone match type stuff, which does have the effect of man when you're talking about a quarterback breaking contain, because you're starting in zone and then picking up man depending on what the offense gives you. So I think that was probably like the little nuance there that makes the most sense to me. It would be odd for Coach Hampton to like completely throw out what he's done pretty much all year long. But that would make more sense to me. But, you know, to your point, you know, when you start turning backs on a guy like that, it gets really dicey, particularly if you leave a gap open in your rush lane. So we got to clean that up for sure. But man, bring them on. Let's see what happens. To be able to beat all three of the departees on their way out of the league would be a special, special feat in an already special season.
It would be. And I think that if we, if we're going to win next week, I think we may have to find a new way to win, to be honest with you. I think that we use Tyjae so much today just to get to this point, that it may be incumbent upon Michael Pratt, our passing game, you know, maybe Shoddy and Iverson to step in there and bear some of the load in this next game. We're going to need some other guys to step up and make plays if we want to hoist the trophy next Saturday. So I'm interested to see what Coach Bota comes up with. I loved his plan today. I thought it was, you know, we knew we were going to have to win a close game. We knew it was going to be really tough. And, you know, we did enough, and we had enough in the tank to get it done. So I'm looking forward to next week, maybe making an appearance at the game. We'll see if I can work that out. But, you know, either way, it's going to be one hell of a matchup against UCF. And I think, Jake, you said it's at 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock Central. I believe it's on ABC for Tulane season ticket holders. I believe the ticket office sent out a communication on Wednesday about how and when to get your tickets, how and when extra tickets go on sale. But 3 o'clock, Yeoman Stadium. Be there, be square.
TulaneTix.com. Check it out. Thanks, guys, for joining me again. We'll see you next Saturday.
All right, boys. Roll wave.
Roll wave.